Hello and welcome to Program Notes for your North Carolina Symphony, an exclusive production of the North Carolina Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. I'll be reading the program notes for all of the Classical Music Series concerts by the North Carolina Symphony for the 2019 and 2020 season. The program notes I'm reading today are for concerts by the North Carolina Symphony at 8 p.m. Friday and Saturday, October 11th and 12th, in Maymandy Concert Hall, Duke Energy Center for the Performing Arts in Raleigh, and at 3 p.m. on Sunday, October 13th at Lee Auditorium, Pinecrest High School in Southern Pines. These performances will be conducted by guest conductor Runa Bergman. The guest soloist will be violinist Philippe Quint. The program on this performance will include the following. The North Carolina Symphony comes onto the stage to perform the Violin Concerto Opus 14 by Samuel Barber, and this will feature our guest violinist, Philippe Quint. Then Quint returns for the second piece on this concert, music by Charlie Chaplin, arranged by Leon Gurvich. This will include Smile, theme from Modern Times, Eternally, the theme from Limelight, and The Kid Fantasy. Then, following the intermission, the North Carolina Symphony returns to play the music of Sergei Rachmaninoff, the Symphony No. 2 in E minor, Opus 27. Now I'll begin our reading of symphony notes. First, some information about our guest conductor and our guest soloist. Norwegian conductor Runa Bergman has been music director of Canada's Calgary Philharmonic Orchestra since 2017 and artistic director and chief conductor of Poland's Szczecin Philharmonic since 2016. He is also music director designate of Switzerland's Argovia Philharmonic beginning in the 2020-21 season. He made his North Carolina Symphony debut in 2018, leading concerts featuring Mussorgsky's pictures at an exhibition in Raleigh, Southern Pines, and Wilmington. Next, information about Philippe Quint, the guest violinist on this performance. An American violinist of Russian heritage, Philippe Quint plays the magnificent 1708 Ruby Antonio Stradivari violin, on loan to him through the Stradivari Society. Highlights of his 2019 and 20 season include performances with the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra, Bochumer Symphoniker, Bilbao Orchestra Sinfonicoa, Louisiana Philharmonic Orchestra, the Singapore Symphony Orchestra, and the Thailand Philharmonic Orchestra. Born in Leningrad, Soviet Union, now St. Petersburg, Russia, Philippe Quint studied at Moscow's Special Musical School for the Gifted. He made his orchestral debut at the age of 9, performing Vinowski's Concerto No. 2. After moving to the United States, he earned both bachelor's and master's degrees from the Juilliard School. Now, information about the music to be performed in this concert. The North Carolina Symphony begins with the Violin Concerto Opus 14 by Samuel Barber. Barber was born March 9, 1910, in Westchester, Pennsylvania. He died January 23, 1981, in New York City. The work was composed in 1939 and 1940. And the first performance, February 7th, 1941, the Philadelphia Orchestra, Eugene Ormandy conducting, with Albert Spaulding as the soloist. Here is the story. In early 1939, Samuel Fells, a wealthy Philadelphia soap manufacturer, commissioned Samuel Barber to write a violin concerto for his protege, the young violinist Isaac Briselli. Barber's commission was a hefty $1,000, and he received half of it in advance. This was Barber's first major commission, and things did not go according to plan. What happened became a cause celebre, and since all the protagonists have died, it remained for a paper trail to ascertain whose version was the true one. According to Barber's biographer, by the end of the summer 1939, the composers sent Berzelii the first two movements written in a conservative, lyrical, and romantic style. Berzelii considered them too simple and not brilliant enough, and refused to accept them. Barber supposedly took his revenge by making the third movement fiendishly difficult. Berzelii declared it unplayable, and Fels wanted his advance commission back. Barber in turn summoned Herbert Baumel, a young violin student from the Curtis Institute of Music, giving him the manuscript and 2 hours to prepare. Accompanied by a piano, the students supposedly demonstrated that the movement was indeed playable. The verdict was that Fels had to pay the rest of the commission. Barber, however, forfeited the second half, and in exchange, Berzelii relinquished his right to the first public performance and never performed the concerto in public. Berzelii, some 40 years later, told a different story, and a paper trail collected by his friends and supporters has essentially corroborated his account. According to Berzelii, he was enthusiastic about the first two movements, but his violin coach was not, and even wanted to rewrite the violin part so that it would be more in keeping with the technical expectations for a concerto. Moreover, Berzelii found the third movement too lightweight rather than too difficult, and suggested that Barber expand it. The composer refused, and he and Berzelii mutually decided to abandon the project. For a while, there was even talk of Berzelii suing Barber for defamation of character over the composer's version of the controversy. Now here are some listening tips. For the first movement, the tone of the movement is that of a quiet discussion, with only occasionally raised voices in the middle, ending in a tranquil whisper. It opens with an expansive lyrical theme on the violin alone. The second theme, introduced by the woodwinds, continues the romantic mood, although it is syncopated and more rhythmic. Periodically, a clarinet plays a brief refrain. Now for the second movement, an extended lyrical oboe solo over muted strings opens the aria-like movement. The third movement, the terse, fiery rondo finale, creates a stunning contrast, placing tremendous demands on the soloist, who has to play at a breathless tempo for 110 measures without interruption. Throughout the perpetual motion, Barber subtly changes the meter and every so often inserts a jazzy, syncopated refrain. The work was written for solo violin, two flutes, one doubling the piccolo, two oboes, two clarinets, two bassoons, two horns, two trumpets, timpani, percussion, piano, and strings. Next, the North Carolina Symphony performs three pieces of music composed by Charles Charlie Chaplin and arranged by Leon Gervich. The works are entitled Smile, the theme from Modern Times, Eternally, the theme from Limelight, and The Kid Fantasy. These works are arranged by Leon Gervich. Charlie Chaplin was born April 16, 1889, probably in Walworth, South London. He died December 25, 1977, in Bode, Switzerland. The work was composed as an orchestral suite arranged in 2018. The first performance was August 2019. The Orchestra Sinfonica de Mineria, Carlos Miguel Prieto, conducting with Philip Quint as the soloist. Now here's the story. Charlie Chaplin, a composer? Who knew? Unless you studied the credits of one of his films. As an impoverished and abused child, Chaplin had made his way into British music halls with the help of his older brother. Within that environment, he learned to act, dance, sing, perform antics, and play the piano, violin, and cello. How well, we don't really know, but anyone familiar with his character, the Little Tramp, knows that he had a gift for rhythm. Before the first feature talkie in 1929, The Jazz Singer, films were accompanied by live musicians who adapted their accompaniments to the action on the screen. Chaplin's silent films, such as The Kid, were no exception. With Modern Times, from 1936, Chaplin's first talkie, the star and director supplied his own soundtrack. He continued the practice for the rest of his career, including 1952's Limelight. In 1972, with the reissue of The Kid, he added a soundtrack in the more modern style. Violinist Philip Quint originally selected several of Chaplin's signature melodies and developed them into concert pieces for piano and violin, which Leon Gurvich subsequently orchestrated. Quint creates virtuosic, romantic, or slightly jazzy renditions of all of the Chaplin tunes in keeping with the contemporaneous musical style of the films. Quint's and Gurvich's arrangements of Chaplin's music are frankly arrangements of arrangements of arrangements. While Chaplin's name was prominently listed as composer, he was actually a musical conceptualizer. Unable to read music, he invented tunes, played them on the piano, and left the orchestration and development to professional composers and arrangers. He further directed how the music would be incorporated into and support the action. In a sense, his work can be compared to old master paintings managing huge workshops of apprentices and assistants who executed the artistic concepts of the master. Now here are listening tips. First, for Smile, this short melody represents the fundamental message of hope in modern times. Despite the depression, grinding poverty, heartless factory mechanization, and the resultant unemployment, respite, and dashed hopes, The Little Tramp and A Hopeless Waif, Paulette Goddard, prevail through optimism. With added words, Nat King Cole later made the song a hit. Now from Eternally, from Limelight, one of Chaplin's final films, this song highlights the tender relationship between a has-been music hall comedian and a young dancer, Claire Bloom, whom he rescues from suicide and rehabilitates to become a star ballerina. As with Smile, words were subsequently added to the tune, which was originally called Terry's Theme. And finally, The Kid Fantasy. Chaplin composed this medley of music long after the original release of this sentimental 1921 silent film, The Kid, in which an unwed mother leaves her newborn infant, Jackie Coogan, in the back seat of a car owned by a just-married wealthy couple. When thieves steal the car, they find the child and abandon him, at which point the little tramp discovers and raises him. The dominant theme of the fantasy is the one Chaplin employed for scenes in which he displays his affection and love, frequently in comic ways. The Irish jig accompanies a dream sequence after the kid has been literally snatched from his arms to be sent to an orphanage. Angels dance around the slum where the two once lived as the tramp, outfitted with fluffy wings, escapes the clutches of winged cops. The instrumentation for this work is as follows. For Smile, it's solo violin, two flutes, one doubling piccolo, two oboes, two clarinets, two bassoons, two horns, two trumpets, timpani, and strings. For Eternally, it's solo violin, two flutes, two oboes, two clarinets, two bassoons, two horns, two trumpets, timpani, and strings. And for The Kid Fantasy, solo violin, two flutes, two oboes, two clarinets, two bassoons, two horns, two trumpets, percussion, harp, and strings. Following the intermission, the North Carolina Symphony returns to the stage to perform the Symphony No. 2 in E minor, Opus 27, by Sergei Rachmaninoff. Rachmaninoff was born April 1, 1873, in Onyeg in the Novgorod region of Russia. He died March 28, 1943, in Beverly Hills. The work was composed in 1906-1907, the first performance February 8, 1908, in St. Petersburg. Russian Symphony Society Orchestra performed under the direction of the composer himself. Now, here is the story. The premier performance of Rachmaninoff's first symphony took place in St. Petersburg in 1897. It was a dismal failure, in large part due to the shoddy conducting of Alexander Glazunov, who was drunk. The young composer's disappointment brought on a severe depression, and for 3 years, Rachmaninoff was unable to do any significant composing. Finally, in 1900, he went for therapy and hypnosis to Dr. Nikolai Dahl. The result was one of the first well-known successes of modern psychotherapy. Rachmaninoff was consequently able to return to creative work and dedicated his second piano concerto to Dahl. Rachmaninoff refused to publish the failed symphony and only acknowledged its existence by calling his next one Number 2. It was composed some two decades later in Dresden, where Rachmaninoff had escaped from social and professional demands in Russia. This expansive work, reflecting the composer's love for romantic themes, was premiered to great applause with Rachmaninoff on the podium in St. Petersburg and is now known as his Victory Symphony. Now here are listening tips. The first movement. The symphony opens mysteriously with a somber, slow introduction, the low strings softly introducing a thematic motto that reappears throughout the work. The violins introduce the first theme, a variant of the motto that becomes urgent and driving. A solo clarinet, followed by the other woodwinds, introduces the lyrical second theme, answered by murmuring strings. The tension and passion grow, culminating in a series of climaxes accentuated with a liberal use of timpani and ending with a passionate transformation of the first theme in the ending coda. Now the second movement. In this energetic scherzo with a contrasting trio, two of the most stunning aspects are Rachmaninoff's use of hushed fragments of his principal themes to make suspenseful transitions between the large sections and his use of the bell-like glockenspiel. Upon the return of the first two themes, Rachmaninoff is said to have inserted one of his trademark musical quotations of the plain chant Dies Irae from the Catholic Mass for the Dead. However, the important intervals are significantly altered and, in fact, outline the skeleton of the first theme rather than introducing new material. Now, the third movement for the beautiful Adagio. Rachmaninoff created one of his most appealing and extended themes. Hollywood has had a heyday with it, shredding the lush melody into trivialized fragments. As the movement continues, though, Rachmaninoff brings back the theme from the first movement's introduction. And now the fourth movement, the headlong rush of the exultant finale, Allegro Vivace, is a festive tarantella, an Italian folk dance. Rachmaninoff introduces another broad lyrical melody for the strings as the second theme. Throughout the movement, fragments of the principal themes of the three preceding movements recur. The movement ends with a joyous coda. This symphony was scored for three flutes, one doubling the piccolo, three oboes, one doubling the English horn, two clarinets, bass clarinet, two bassoons, four horns, three trumpets, three trombones, tuba, timpani, percussion, and strings. These symphony notes were written and copyrighted in 2019 by Joseph and Elizabeth Kahn. You have been listening to Program Notes for your North Carolina Symphony, an exclusive production of the North Carolina Reading Service. I'll be reading all of the program notes from the classical music series of the North Carolina Symphony for the 2019-2020 season. This program is available on demand as a podcast on the day before each concert series and will be available for the remainder of the concert season. I'm George Douglas. Thank you for joining me today. We sincerely hope that listening to Symphony Notes will enhance your enjoyment of your North Carolina Symphony. Goodbye until next time.